Welcome to Something to Say, where we bring voices from diverse backgrounds who will share their unique stories and perspectives on finding their passion and provide insights on how you can find yours. Join us as host Greg DeShields guides us through this enlightening journey.
Welcome to Something to Say podcasts and season two. We are a unique platform that amplifies the voices of individuals from various backgrounds sharing their passion. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Greg DeShields, and I'm pleased to bring you another episode. But before we begin, Something to Say podcast has been nominated in Metro Philly's Best of 2025 contest under Best Philly Blogger category. You can support Something to Say podcast by voting once per day now through August. Yes, through August at www.metrophillysbest.com. We're keeping our fingers crossed. We'd love to bring this home and we're counting on your vote. Now, back to business. Today, we welcome Monica Olinger, president of Olinger Studio and Enlight Media. After working nearly a decade as a development editor and sales specialist in educational publishing industry, Monica established Olinger Publishing Services, OPS, in 1995. She added a new full-service division, Olinger Development and Editorial, in 2016. And in 2018, OPS and ODE merged to become Olinger Studios and partnered with Patrice Jones and Charles Arida to launch Enlight Media. Olinger Studio and Enlight Media launched in context in 2023. That's incontextnow.com. In context is a video-based online program that effectively integrates history into inclusion and belonging initiatives, empowering organizations to be a force for change. The award-winning debut collection, Patterns in American Racism, focuses on anti-Black racism in the United States. The new collection, Women Rising, Overcoming Patriarchy in America, explores the historical restrictions imposed on women in work and home environments, while gaining insight into the enduring resistance that fuels women's continued pursuit of equality. Thank you so much, Monica, for joining us. So, Monica, welcome to Something to Say podcast. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to talk to you about our new product.
Yeah, and you know, I'm really anxious to dive deep into the conversation about the work at Olinger Studios and Enlight Media, because it's just so incredibly interesting. And we have plenty of time to cover a lot of that detail today. So I want to, you know, engage in as many different perspectives as possible. So thank you once again for joining us. Now, I know that you are a truly busy person. You do a lot of consulting work and connecting with business leaders. But here on Something to Say, we like to first to begin by adding some get-to-know-you questions. Our audience tends to find it pretty interesting when they hear some responses to those questions. So we want to start with icebreaker questions. So Okay. Are you up for that?
Sure.
Okay. All right. So we start with the easy ones and we get progressively more difficult with them. But, so what's your favorite childhood memory?
So my favorite childhood memory, it mushes together a bunch of memories, and Okay. That is around family camping trips. My family loved to go camping when I was young, and those, I just have great memories from those camping trips. There's something about, you know, eggs made on a campfire or a hot dog, you know, roasted over a campfire. It's just better. The food's better. Everything's better. And we took some wonderful camping trips, and that was really great family time.
And, wow. It's something really about the whole camping experience that, you know, kicks in your survivalist desire as well. Like if I was outside and I had to make it as close to normal as possible, what could I do in order to make that happen? I love camping. I miss it. I haven't done it as much as I used to.
Me either. I don't as much. And I did used to really love it. And interesting in our family, my mom was the real, she was the survivalist. Like she could start a fire. She was very capable. So she was great. Yeah.
You know, it's funny how when we ask that question, those childhood memories have such an influence on business leaders today. Like when they need to go to a happy place for some reason, they have something that kind of connects the dot and love that. That's why a lot of times when we ask this question, people are like, I'm so glad you asked me that question because it is a great time of my life to remember. All right. So let's make it a little bit more intense. So what was your biggest failure and what did you really learn from that experience?
Okay. So I would say, I think my biggest failure is early in my career when I first started in publishing almost 40 years ago, which is horrifying to say that out loud. To get promoted in publishing, you really needed to come up through the sales force. That was the way that you got promoted in publishing. And I started off as what's called a development editor in-house. So I didn't have that sales experience. And I was ambitious. I wanted to get promoted. So I'm like, all right, how hard can it be? I'm going to go out. I'm going to be a sales rep. So I left the company I was with and went to McGraw-Hill and was a sales rep at McGraw-Hill. And I was terrible at it. I mean, I was so terrible. And I was so arrogant thinking, how hard can this be? Sales, you know, and I found out, oh, that's a really hard job. And I learned what I was good at from that experience. And I'm good at really digging into things, lots of detail. Like I need to have like a big problem to solve. Mm. And the sales job, that especially that job for selling textbooks, you're really quick, you know, you have quick interactions with people. You don't get to really delve in deep with the topics and the books. And so I learned from that what I really wanted to do, and that was start my own company. And that's what I did.
Well, you know, we ask that question, and so often that failure has the way of igniting the true desire or true aspirations of the individual. Aside from knowing what you definitely want to do, it's also important to know what you definitely don't want to do.
Right.
After having had that experience. You know, it's interesting you talk about the media or publication industry. So from a labor perspective, it must have been a lot of people back then compared to now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we had full art departments. We had full layout department. Back in those days, we actually cut stuff up and laid it out on these big boards. And yeah, it was very labor intensive. A lot of people, they started downsizing in the 90s as computers became more prevalent. And that's just continued. I mean, the industry has really, really gotten a lot smaller.
Wow. Well, we're certainly going to talk about the industry, but as you kind of referenced that, I could imagine how, as you began your career, how very different it might even be for someone today who's starting that, because there's a lot less of what it was in terms of options and choices and how to navigate.
Definitely.
All right. So this question is really a fun question. We've had very interesting answers, but if you could have dinner with any historical figure, who would that be and why?
Okay. Here I'm going to geek out on my English major background. It would be Jane Austen. I just admire her so much as an author. She's such a fantastic author. Like to this day, think about, they're still making movies out of her books.
Yeah.
Very popular. And she's just a wonderful writer. But she also was starting, like she was definitely dealing with issues of opportunities for women. Mm. And I'd loved, you know, like she was just kind of getting into the fact that women were held back because of, you know, the strictures that society put on them. So I would just love to talk to her about that and just really admire her a lot.
I'm sure she would be so amazed as you tell her about your life, the dramatic shifts in terms of the influence on women in just your lifespan, considering the influence she's had since then. So very interesting choice.
If you think about it, because like my mother couldn't get a mortgage or a credit card in the 70s, right? So even like you said, in my lifetime, look how much has changed. I mean, I'm sure she would be blown away by the opportunities women have now. So,
Well, she could also feel very accomplished that she made a contribution, to the efforts to move things forward.
Yeah.
So we also like to get a little bit deeper and learn about your story. So one of the other questions that we love to get insight on, especially from business leaders such as yourself, is how big is your inner circle?
My inner circle is pretty tight. I'd say five, six people in my inner circle. And my sister's probably my number one advisor.
That's interesting. You know, there have been a bunch of different ways that people have identified it. Some have, called it their kitchen cabinet and their personal board. But recently someone called it their front row. And I just thought that was such a cool phrase in terms of a front row. But consistently, as people aspire and kind of, move into roles where their decisions are very impactful, that ability to have a tight, small circle that can help provide you positive and critical insights has a significant influence on you as you go forward.
So my sister's had an amazing career in her own right. And so I just trust her when she says, hey, this isn't right, or you're not, I wouldn't handle it this way, I'd handle it that way. She's just really good. Her experience is amazing, and she's a really good advice giver, and she's brutally honest.
Well, that's unique. Well, that kind of takes us to the next question. I'm assuming that that's the answer. So who's had the most influence in your life?
Well, actually, I'm going to go with a different family member, and that's my mother. I mean, my mother, she was so creative and so resilient and so smart. And I always tell people, she showed me how to be an entrepreneur. Now, my father was an entrepreneur. He owned a restaurant and a pizza place, and he was an entrepreneur. But my mother showed how to be an entrepreneur working for somebody else. Mm. So she always worked, she was a teacher for a long time, and then she ran a college bookstore. First at a small school, then at Bowling Green State University here in Ohio, a bigger school. But she was so creative in how she did her job, and always admired that. She was my number one fan. I mean, just really, really a great person. And she mentored so many people. Like, she took care of so many people, and she mentored so many people. She was very admirable.
Wow. That idea of being an entrepreneur working for someone else, when to your mother, and I worked at Temple University in the Fox School of Business, the dean always referred to me as an intrapreneur because I was able similarly to work internally within the organization, kind of create, your own company or your own organization, which at times was a little bit of a challenge because I may have thought that I had more influence than maybe I actually did. but that's such an interesting thought. So now I asked you about, what was perhaps the biggest mistake you had and how you learned from that. But from a different twist, to go even that much more in understanding your story, what was the best year of your life? And when was really the worst year of your life?
So interestingly, that's the same year for me. So the worst year, my mother died suddenly in 1995, way too young. And so that was terrible. I still miss her, all these years later. Your mom's your number one fan. I mean, that there's just no getting around that. And but I inherited a small amount of money from her that enabled me to start my business. Wow. So I knew she would have wanted me to do that. She would have been so proud that I took what was terrible and turned it into life's work, basically. So I'm just forever grateful to her for that.
You're the second person who had happened in the same year. And it was interesting. One person we interviewed, she lost her mother, but she gave birth in the same year.
Okay.
She said it was a most bizarre experience for her because of her emotional swing in the course of 1 year, how she thought it was really wonderful to be able to celebrate the loss of a family member and build a legacy, and then all of a sudden to welcome a new person in and try and help build a new path for them. So, So now that we've learned a lot about you, it's a great segue to kind of, unpack some of your insights more generally about the industry that you're in. So media and publication. So what are some of the specific trends that you're seeing today?
So obviously AI is a huge trend. And actually video, like lots more video than there used to be in textbook publishing, digital. I mean, that's been the case for a while. So, you know, we had to branch out from publishing when, as that got smaller. And so we deal with other types of content. Content is content. So we develop other types of content. But I would say the biggest trend really is AI. And I am, I'm cautious. I'm somewhat skeptical because I do think there are some issues that have to be worked out around intellectual property. Which I'm very sensitive to. And also, you know, like some of the quirks, like the idea that the AI hallucinates and it makes things up. Like, so you still need a person, like, you know, you still need a person to vet things and check things. And also, I don't know that I think AI is a great thinker. And so that's what we do really well is think about problems and solve those problems. So I would say AI.
You know, it's interesting what you were just saying in terms of AI and its thinking. But I recently heard a reporter who spent 6 months doing a research piece on AI and across all the different platforms, which was interesting. And she had said, you know, a chat box is really there to just give you words. Right. And in most cases, it's there to give you positive reinforcement of words. Which is why, you know, she shared that there are people who have emotional relationships with their AI chat box, which was amazing to hear that.
Yeah.
But she did talk about Claude, which is a chat box which has some kind of moral compass built into its coding, which means it doesn't always give you positive affirmation. Sometimes it actually helps to do that. But along that lines, when we think of trends and what you just talked about, what are your thoughts around truth in terms of what you get when you get stuff from AI?
So, like I said, I'm pretty skeptical. I do too, and I think Claude is good. So one of the things our team is really working on is it really matters what you ask. So the prompt really matters. So what you ask it to do, what you ask it to give you, and then how you hone it, like how you continue to like dig in and say, okay, now what about this and what about that? So you know, I also think like at some point, is it a doom loop? Like, does it keep scraping itself basically? Like, I still feel like you need human input, like you still need human creativity. So Patrice says every time he mentions AI to me, I look like I just talked like he just talked about my old boyfriend or something. Like, so, and he's gung ho, and I really appreciate that. And lots of members on we're exploring it for sure. But you know, I'm just skeptical, and I'm just going to stay that way for a while.
Yeah, you know, it's so much as I kind of compare what it was like when I first started using it, maybe 3 years ago, and it would it would, you know, be very transparent to say I don't have that information, and now there is access to that information, but, you know, the question is about, to your point, like, how do you challenge that information? And to your point, if you push it, and I've found that in certain cases, that it will kind of say, this is all I have for right now, which is kind of interesting. So are there some common misconceptions that you'd like to clear up in your industry that people tend to believe?
So I think the biggest misconception is around what people think an editor does. And I think everyone needs an editor. Even I need an editor. And I have somebody I go to regularly and be like, hey, read this and, you know, give me your feedback on it. And it's not about commas and it's not about, you know, the mechanical part of it. It's about, is my thinking good? Is my logic good? Am I presenting my argument well? Is this understandable? And that's what we bring to all of our work is that thoughtfulness and you need that. Everybody needs that. I don't care how accomplished you are. It's really good to have sounding boards. It's really good to have people that maybe know more about something than you know. And they're like, have you thought about this? Have you thought about this point? Like, so to push you to really improve whatever the content or the writing is that you're doing. So everyone needs an editor. That's my hobby horse.
I remember when I was in college, I was the editor of our newspaper and later our yearbook. And we had an editor. And whenever I submitted something, he was really good about moving pieces around. Like he would challenge you to say, take it from here and put it there and see how it reads that way. Which I've adapted today in a lot of my writing of where this particular content should be and how it affects the flow. But to your point, you know, having an editor who has that certain kind of eye helps you to get there. So
yeah,
very interesting.
Yeah.
So we've talked about AI, but are there some innovations or breakthroughs that you've seen that kind of gives you a bit of hope in how it helps to advance your industry forward?
So I don't know that I have anything specific there. I will say that we've hired a few young people recently who they give me hope. Because of how they're embracing the technology, you know, they've grown up with this stuff. It's just common nature to them. Mm-hmm. So how they think about AI or TikTok or Instagram or, you know, whatever, and how they kind of interact with the world, they're just terrific. Mm-hmm. And they're terrific thinkers. And that's probably the greatest hope. I know people complain about kids today, but I think kids today are great. And I think I can't wait to see what they do. And if anybody is going to be able to marshal and use AI to its full potential, it's those people. Yeah.
All right. So I want to dive a little bit deeper into, you know, your company. So what really inspired you to launch the In Context product? It's that, you know, video-based online programs that you have and how it's integrated into issues of history and inclusion and belonging. But really, what inspired you to launch that?
So we come from an academic background. Olinger Studios has worked on the textbook side of things. And then Enlight, Patrice comes from Patrice Jones, who's my partner in Enlight Media. He comes from that academic background, but from the video side of things. So when George Floyd was murdered and the Black Lives Matter movement started, Patrice immediately had a program that he put together on that. And we kind of saw it as a perfect opportunity to take the video, his video and creative side, and then our academic and text side. And we actually have a person on staff who's got a PhD in history. We have a person with a PhD in English, so they have a deep academic background. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of the beginning of it. And then I realized in talking to my friends who are educated, well-intentioned people who did not know the history of racism in the United States. Mm-hmm. They did not know about redlining. They did not know about the Tulsa massacre. They didn't know about the Wilmington massacre. They didn't know about what Jim Crow did and how it, you know, held Black people back for decades. And so I thought, well, we need better allies, and those allies need to know the history. Hmm. So that's why we really have a focus on history. And then the thing that really kind of put it over the top for us is in doing research, I found an article by a couple of academics, one out of Harvard, one from Syracuse, two political scientists. And they found when you gave people the history of racism and some other, also sexism, some other things, which we'll get into here with the Women Rising series. But when you give people that history, they're more open to the solutions. Hmm. So they're like, okay, this isn't about pull yourself up by your bootstraps. You know, this is, you know, people have had the boot on them and have kept them from being able to have the same opportunities. So all of those things kind of came together and was like, we got to do something with this. So we created the first series, the video module series, and that was Patterns in American Racism. And now we've created the second series, which is Women Rising, Overcoming Patriarchy in America. So it's about women's rights issues.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Through my consulting practice, I'm working with an organization. They do a portion of their conference that engages juniors and seniors to attend and become familiar with their professional development, but they'd like to create more of an educational experience in advance of it. Mm-hmm. So we developed a curriculum that provides them, as a part of it, the professional knowledge that they need, but they wanted specific African-American history in the hospitality industry. Ah. So it's an asynchronous course. It alternates between Black history in the tourism industry and some of the professional curriculum that they would expect. Mm-hmm. And throughout the course of the summer, they'll participate through discussion board or video or reading assignments or guest speakers, all with the intent by the time they attend the conference in November, they would have received a lot more insight and a deeper appreciation of the experience that they'll have at the conference. And then there's a case competition that they'll have and they receive awards and stuff like that. So the model is something that we hope to roll out, but that emphasis was around history, to your point.
Yeah.
How can we create something that has a deeper meaning to those who will be involved? So we start working with the cohort in July. So I'm looking forward to that. It's going
to
be.
Can't wait to hear how it goes. Yeah, love it. Love it.
So one of the primary themes that runs through the Women Rising Collection, and I saw that it's just been released. It's on your website. So here, if you could give us some more insights about that.
Yeah, really the main theme, well, the main themes are around persistence and resilience. So women have always wanted the rights that we have now and have fought for those rights, and they've just been persistent. And when they, you know, when they had butt up against barriers to those rights, they would be resilient in how they worked within the system. Mm-hmm. So they might not, you know, maybe they didn't get a vote, but were there other ways that they could influence politics and influence society? And so it's just really interesting to see that, you know, we're not painting women as victims. Women have had agency and have fought for centuries for the rights that we have now. Another big theme in the series is that there are, you know, we know, you know, some names of historical women, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, Eleanor Roosevelt, some names like that. You know those names, and those women were important in shaping the movements. Mm-hmm. But there were everyday women at every step along the way that what they did is they showed up and they defied the limits that were put on them. So those women that went into factories during World War II, like, you know, that you know, we highlight some of those women's stories too, because I think it's important to know that you don't have to wait for a leader. You can have your own fight and you can fight for your rights just by what you do in your everyday life. Lily Ledbetter, I think, is a great example of that. Like, she just was incensed that it wasn't right that she wasn't getting paid what the men were getting paid. And look what she did. I mean, accomplished amazing things. So. Wow.
So the way that the series is able to shine a light on women who's really shaped that history is so incredibly important. Is there one story that really stood out that it surprised you in a way that has even inspired you today?
I think the person that really stands out the most to me is Frances Beale. And Frances Beale was a Black woman who was very involved in the civil rights movement. She was involved with the Student Nonviolent Committee that John Lewis started. But she was frustrated in her work in that, in the civil rights movement, that women were really pushed to the side in the movement, that they didn't have a place of leadership and authority. So she went off and created her own organization. And she started aligning with the women's movement. And then she was frustrated by the fact that the white middle class women were pushing the Black women aside. So she wrote a book called Double Jeopardy: To Be Black and Female. And it kind of it started the discussion around intersectionality. And she really, really brought that to the forefront of, in order for the feminist movement to advance, you need to be Black women in, but not just Black women. Lower income women also, and also women with different sexuality. So she really was the person that started that whole idea of intersectionality. And she's still alive, and she has pushed the boundaries in, you know, every way. She's an amazing, really inspirational woman.
And so much of that is a current conversation today, you know, and how we're kind of navigating the climate. You know, it was interesting as I was preparing that question and I was looking at some of the segments. It reminded me when we were recently taking a trip to New England, NPR during Women's History Month featured the story of the woman who created Tupperware. And it was such an amazing story. But it also goes back to that period where women couldn't do certain things, which even as an entrepreneur and how she was able to create these legion of women who really wanted to be entrepreneurs in their own right and sell Tupperware to their friends, how partnering with a man made it difficult for her to have the legal ownership of her contribution to the business. Absolutely amazing story. And I apologize, I don't remember her name, but I do know that it's an absolutely amazing story.
Sorry, I can't think of her name either. So, but I know the story. I'm sure I heard it on NPR because I'm
It's an amazing story. So, all right. So you talked about the need for historical context. Do you think people are resistant to learning history that has shaped the issues that really face us today?
So I do think there's resistance to that around the fact that people kind of form their opinions and then it's hard to move them off those opinions, even though they maybe don't remember what they learned in history class or, you know, they're not willing to rethink some things. And every rights movement has had backlash. There's always, you know, three steps forward, two steps back, you know, like type of thing in whatever the movement is. And I feel like we are in a moment right now where there is some backlash and maybe we've been a little complacent. I think women are realizing, oh no, we got to still be in the fight. We have to still be pushing. But for me, it's really getting people to examine where their opinions come from and hopefully building them on truth and facts rather than just, you know, something that their father believed or their mother believed or their uncle believed, whatever. So, yeah.
You know, it's not a question that we had scheduled, but it certainly has come to mind. Does the ability to be exposed to or digest history today seem very, very different than it was before? Meaning before it was somewhat simple, you know, an encyclopedia or you have a teacher in a class, but you didn't have a variety of influences that would kind of distort your interpretation of history. But today there's so many angles of how that word history is pierced and changed. So I was just kind of curious about, you know, how does that change even the, I guess, the interpretation of what history is?
So I think for me, for sure, when I was learning history, it was a very narrow history, right? It was the history of white men, basically. And what has really changed is other groups saying, hey, wait a minute, we contributed to this history too. We want our stories told too. And so I think there's always the idea that there's a limited pie. So if I get rights, you have to give up rights. Instead of, how about we all have opportunities and that creates more opportunities for everybody. So there's this idea of like, if women are saying, well, we want our story told too, or African-Americans are like, we want our story told too. There are people who think, well, that means we're not going to honor the people I learned about in history. We're not going to honor George Washington, or we're not going to honor Thomas Jefferson. It's like, well, you can do all of that. It isn't an either or. It's like, you know, and when you bring in these other stories, those people's stories become richer, I think, right? Like, there are no saints,
right?
Like, all of these great people from history all had their issues, all had their, you know, their weaknesses. But I want to know them as human beings. To me, like, I'm a human being. I have weaknesses. I have strengths. Like, we're, you know, that's the human condition, right? Is let's be humble and let's realize, like, hey, let's learn the full history instead of just the Hallmark card version of history, right? Yeah.
Well, that multidimensional storytelling makes it so much more interesting than to only follow one script. But, you know, Monica, I could talk to you a lot. I thought to myself, okay, there's no way I'm going to ask all the questions I'd like to ask during the course of just one podcast. So I'm certainly going to invite you to come back to do a part two. But here at Something to Say, we love to conclude all of our interviews by following suit with the name of our podcast, Something to Say. So what do you have to say?
So I think what I'd like to say at the end of this great discussion, thank you so much, is our stories are important. And that, you know, a big part of what we do is around storytelling and narrative. So I want people to know your story. Know your story. Talk to the people in your life. Talk to your mom, your grandma, your aunt, you know, your dad, your grandfather, your uncle. Get your story. Know it. I guarantee you there are stories they have you've never heard that will change your mind about things. And then be proud of that story. And then tell that story. So I think stories just are so important. They're what make life worth living.
Well, I appreciate your insight on that. And I should just say, as you were saying that, it reminded me my grandnephew is graduating on Saturday. And I'm giving him my father's watch, which would be his great grandfather's watch. And the idea is to tell him the story about him.
Excellent. I love it.
So I am going to take that out.
One story from my family is my grandmother was her high school valedictorian. And they wouldn't let her give the speech because she was a woman. So she had to give the salutatory address instead of the valedictory address. And I knew that. She had told me that story. But when she died and I went through her things, she still had her handwritten speech.
Wow.
Like, it mattered to her.
Yeah.
She cared about that enough that she kept that her whole life.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. And at that pivotal point in life, those are the times when you hold on to those things because they stick with you forever.
Yeah.
Well, Monica, thank you so much for sharing your passion, your insights, and your words are truly informative and will certainly inspire many of our leaders. So it has been my pleasure having you on our show today.
Well, thanks again, Greg. This has been great.
So listeners, that's a wrap for this episode of Something to Say. Stay tuned for more inspiring conversations with voices of individuals from diverse backgrounds sharing their passion. So until next time, this is Greg DeShields.
Thank you for tuning in to Something to Say. We trust you found some valuable insights and takeaways that can help you find your passion. Don't miss out on future episodes. Please subscribe, rate, and review us on your preferred platform. We value your feedback and suggestions, so let us know how we can serve you better. Keep the conversation going and stay inspired until we meet again. Take care and happy listening.